Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is hour two. It is great to have you here. It's live in Los Angeles. The show's called The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Mark Schlereth in a couple of minutes. Last hour, I'm going to go through the first, well, the half of the NFL draft. We're going to do all the way to the 16th pick with Daniel Jeremiah and I. So the draft is very funny because we're not going to predict trades. Then it gets squirrely, right?
Right.
So we're just going to go top 16 teams, what I would take. And it's very interesting. There's a lot of pressure in drafts, right? There's a lot of pressure. Like, Belichick doesn't give a rip. But if you ask people who the best players are in the draft, Trevor Lawrence is the only one that'll get drafted probably in the top four. Because there's this sense, well, you can't draft an interior offensive lineman in the top five picks. Remember the Colts got Quentin Nelson. People are like, whoa, he's a guard. No, he's the best guard prospect in 25 years.
And that's what they need.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll give you an example. Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. I believe he's the best tight end prospect since Kellen Winslow. I think he's that good. I think he is a 10-year All-Pro. I think he's the third best tight end in the league as a rookie. He won't be Travis Kelce or Kittle next. He is literally physically doesn't look like anybody in college football. Why couldn't I take him two or three? I remember years ago, there's a lot of pressure. You can't take a safety too high or an interior lineman too high. But to me, if you get a generational talent, Quentin Nelson, he's going to be the best guard in football for 10 years. I'd take him number one. What do I care? But there's a lot of pressure in drafting. There's a lot of this like cultural, well, you can't do that and you can't do that. And I absolutely think it affects people. There used to be this thing in the draft where they'd say, I always use this example. I wrote about this in my first book. You heard me. You should buy it. The people say, well, Bill Belichick always scoffs at this. When people say, well, what do you need? And he's always like, we just draft the best player available, which he's lying. It's nonsense. They have taken running backs in the first round and left tackles because they need it. Nate Solder wasn't the best player available when they took it. They needed a tackle. But I always use the example that if I went to the grocery store and my wife said, hey, can you get some milk and bread? And I came back with a rake. And she's like, we already have a rake. And I went, well, the value, it was on sale. It was the best value in the store. She said, you're an idiot. We needed milk, bread, and eggs. So when you go into the draft, I don't buy this best player available. My thing is, what do I need? If I'm the New York Jets, I don't believe I need a quarterback. I believe I need a receiver, a tight end, a right tackle, a running back. So I think drafts are funny. I think there's a psychology here. Like, Atlanta doesn't have very many good players defensively in their front seven. Go draft one. Matt Ryan's not going to miss a snap for 2 years. You don't need a quarterback. Matt Ryan's 35 years old. And with Arthur Smith, the new offensive coordinator, new coach, who's an offensive guy, my guess is Matt Ryan's going to have two really, really good years with finally getting an offensive coach instead of all these defensive coaches. So the draft to me is I'm going to draft today. Like if I was a GM, what do I need and who's a stud? Nothing else matters. I'm not going to the store and getting a rake if I have one. I'm getting what my wife tells me to get because we need it. That's what I'm doing. Mark Schlereth now is joining me as I ramble on multiple Super Bowls, multiple Pro Bowls. By the way, did you ever play with a team, Washington or Denver, and there was a first or a second round draft pick? And you knew instantly, dude can't play. Our team screwed up.
All the time.
Really?
Yeah. A bunch of times. But players know. I mean, yeah. I'll tell you a quick story. I was with Washington. I think it was a '94 draft, and we drafted two quarterbacks: one fourth or fifth overall, and one in the seventh round. And the very first day of minicamp, we went through all the number ones, went through their reps, and then we repeated the script. And I was standing there with Bostic and with the offensive line, Riley McKenzie and Ed Simmons and Jimmy Lachey, and I said, God, just on the first glance, the guy we drafted in the seventh round is way better than the guy we drafted in the first round. Way better. And first rounder was Heath Shuler. Seventh rounder was Gus Frerotte, who went on to play 15 years in the league. So, yeah, I mean, you see it all the time. The problem being, and not to disparage Heath or anything like that, but it's one of those situations where in the draft, oftentimes teams draft athleticism because it's the easiest thing in the world to see, right?
Right.
It's easy to see athleticism. It's easy to see athletic talent. It's easy to see guys who run fast and jump high and can do burpees. I always say this, football is really hard for athletes. It's easy for football players. And you got to get a great football player that happens to be an exceptional athlete. That's, that to me is the real trick. And I'm with you. You draft need, but you got to have good players up and down your roster. And that's really what it amounts to. People look at Tampa Bay and say, well, Tampa Bay, it was just the quarterback. Are you kidding me? I mean, Jameis Winston threw 30 picks and had 9 fumbles. Like 39, you can't overcome 39 turnovers. That roster is loaded, especially on the defensive side. That's really, they just put a stabilizing force at the quarterback position in there, and they went on to win a world championship. But that roster, what Jason Light has done in Tampa Bay, that roster is freaking awesome. It's just awesome.
Yeah, they can really draft. So Russell Wilson's story in The Athletic today, he watched the Super Bowl with Brady. He sat in a box with his wife next to Roger Goodell and seethed. And when he went back to Seattle, he went to Pete Carroll and said, can you guys give me a heads up on the offensive line? What are we doing? Where are we going? He's been sacked 400 times in 9 years, and Seattle largely dismissed him. During the season, a game against Arizona on Thursday, he went in with some ideas. The coaches largely dismissed him. How much say should a quarterback have? How much did Elway have? How much say should a quarterback have, Mark?
Well, I think you definitely, I mean, Russell Wilson's one of the hardest working guys in football. I think one thing that you have to be really aware of is, yeah, he's been hit a lot. Yeah, he brings a lot of those on himself. Yeah, he makes a lot of plays when he pulls the ball down and starts scrambling around and plays a little schoolyard, but he also puts himself in harm's way. So I would ask, of those sacks, how many are you directly responsible for? Because you didn't take the first option. You decided to hold on to the ball, and you decided to make a play. That's a double-edged sword for Russell Wilson because he does that quite often. So I understand the frustration. Part of being able to protect your quarterback is not better offensive linemen. It's a better scheme and it's play calling. And how does that affect you? Like, how do you run the ball? How do you mitigate? One of the things that was really impressed upon me, and this was from Sean Payton, how do you mitigate if you're going to drop back 35 times, which is an average Sunday for any quarterback, you're under mental duress 35 times. How, as a coaching staff, do I mitigate those 35 dropbacks and give you 10 or 12 easy answers right off the bat? How many times do I set up play action? How many times do I have a difference between play action and run action? How many times can I take those 35 reps and at the end of the day only have my offensive line really responsible to block without some type of deception 12 times? Because then I can last forever. Then I eliminate those sacks. But everybody just looks at the O-line and says, well, the O-line is crappy. They give up a bunch of sacks. I normally look at, like for instance, go back to the Super Bowl. Like, was that a really bad offensive line or was that a really bad game plan? When you go 92% of the time, you go on five out. So you're in 5-0 protection with 3 backups. That's coaching.
Yeah.
That's not a crappy offensive line. Like, what do you expect backup players to do? And if you don't protect them, if you don't call a play, and if you don't call an offense to mitigate some of the potential disasters, well, that's on you as a coaching staff. So that, to me, is what you have to parse out. How much is on Russell? How much is on the coaching staff? How much is on the system? And how can we mitigate those hits on Russell Wilson? And that's what they have to do to to solve the issue and to, you know, for those guys to come together, that's what needs to be talked about.
So finally, J.J. Watt. So J.J. is one of the only defensive players in the NFL that I think has a brand. And he's obviously leaking stuff and, you know, he's stoking this thing and God love him for it. We're here to be used. Slide into my DMs and I'll support you as well. It is interesting, though, when you got the money and you got the Hall of Fame stuff, I think I'd want to win games. Like, I think Green Bay works for him or Kansas City. Mark, you tell me. And you were an offensive lineman and a lower pick, so you didn't get a lot of money. But in the end, how much of a driving force is money early and late in your career? What do you think goes through J.J. Watt's mind now? Because the stories I'm seeing are $15, $16 million. And Cleveland's the one team that has cap space, and I don't think it's the best place to go. But if it's money, they maybe can afford him.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, you know, I think it really comes down to early in your career, you know, you're trying to win. Obviously, everybody's competing. This game is too hard to lose. It just stinks when you lose. But when you've done all the things that J.J. Watt has done, he built his career and his brand followed. I think that's a very important distinction. He became the best player in football on the defensive side of the ball. And then the brand came with him. You know, then he started the philanthropic stuff that he does. And the guy's a phenomenal human being and a phenomenal athlete. There's no question about that. Now it comes down to, man, I want a ring, right? I've got the money. I've got the celebrity. I've got the Hall of Fame status. I want a championship. And then you've got to decide who gives you the best chance to win a championship. And then you follow the quarterback, right? You follow Tom Brady. You follow Aaron Rodgers. You follow Patrick Mahomes. You go somewhere, even if it's at a hometown discount or away discount. But whatever the best fit is for you to win a world championship, that's where you go, even if you cost yourself a couple $100,000.
Yeah. Mark Schlereth, he redid the room in his house. It looks great. I tend to just sell my house and buy a new one. Schlereth, I bet you've been in that house for 25 years. Am I right?
21 years.
See, that's who you are, though. That's the offensive line mentality I love. You don't bail on your house. You give love to your house. I just bail on my house.
Right. I don't commit adultery on my house. I just say, I love you. I love you. And I'm going to repaint you, baby.
I love that. Yeah. That guy's committed, folks. Good seeing you, Schlereth.
You too, buddy.
I knew he owned that house forever. That's Mark Schlereth. Me, I'm just flirting with a new house.
You like moving, I think.
I like
You claim you don't like moving, but you move a lot.
Yeah.
For somebody that doesn't like moving.
My actions are louder than my words.
This is the balance there.
I like transition. I like challenges.
You're very comfortable with change.
That's it. I'm very comfortable with the pivot.
See the positive switch on that?
Thank you. Instead of weirdo, I come across as Elon Musk in one sentence. All right, what do we got today? Sarah Kustok, she's great. She'll be joining us this hour. I will draft the first round last hour. So you're going to see how I operate. My savviness, my craziness. I'm going to make first 16 picks. We're going to do half of the first round. We were going to do the first round, but I'm so weird I couldn't stop talking. I'd go for like 2.5 hours. So we're going to do 16 picks with Daniel Jeremiah, who's terrific.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, 3-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Sunday, the best season ever continues as the NASCAR Cup Series heads to Homestead Miami Speedway for the Dixie Baca 400. See who will rise up and take the crown at the season's first mile and a half track. All the action starts Sunday at 3:30 Eastern on Fox and anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
Good. So it's interesting, the J.J. Watt story. So there's four teams today they're saying are in the running for him. J.J. Watt's 32, great defensive lineman. 3-time defensive player of the year. And the teams are the Steelers, the Titans, the Bills, and Cleveland. But only one of those, Green Bay gets mentioned too, only one of them has actual cap space, and that is Cleveland. So, you know, it leads you to believe that Cleveland is the one offering the $15 or $16 million because they can afford it. Now, Cleveland's in a weird spot where they just signed Myles Garrett to a five-year extension for $125 million, and they also pay Sheldon Richards and a defensive tackle $14 million a year. So if they went and got J.J. Watt for $15 to $16 million, they'd be $55 million in on their defensive line. That's a lot of money. Their linebackers are atrocious, and their secondary is a problem. Denzel Ward is talented but hurt a lot. Greedy Williams was hurt last year. He's not a physical player. It's not a terribly intimidating secondary. The linebacking core is bad, and so maybe their feeling is we're just going to overwhelm everybody up front. I think Olivier Vernon's a free agent, so he may not be there, plus he's coming off an injury. So it would be interesting. If you had J.J. Watt, Sheldon Richardson, and Myles Garrett on the defensive line, there's not a lot outside of the 49ers that could really compare to it. It would be Tampa, 49ers, and Cleveland would have overwhelming defensive fronts. Now, some of you may be asking, how can Cleveland keep affording all these guys? But remember, when you Baker Mayfield, they're not paying anything. Nick Chubb was drafted early. They're not paying anything. So offensive line, Conklin, the right tackle they're paying, but they've drafted pretty well on the offensive line. So they're not paying a ton for some of their top offensive linemen. They're not paying anything for their running backs. They're definitely not paying anything in the back end of their defense. It's terrible. But so where do you put your money? Cleveland may be just saying, hey, we can't solve our secondary and linebacker issues right in one draft. We can't. So we're going to have the best defensive front in the NFL with Sheldon Richardson, Myles Garrett, who's a monster, and J.J. Watt. And that there's no question. It makes your secondary better. So that may be what that it leads me to believe when you got these four or five teams, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Buffalo, and Green Bay would have to move some deck chairs to make it work. Cleveland could offer $15 million and wouldn't have to make too many sacrifices. What they would do, my guess is they would trade Odell Beckham Jr., who I don't think is a good fit anyway. I would trade Odell Beckham Jr. tomorrow to get a corner, to get somebody's second-best corner, or get another draft pick. I would trade Odell Beckham tomorrow to get a second-round pick. Absolutely. That would give Cleveland a first-round pick. They could use that on a linebacker, which they need desperately, and then a couple of picks in the second round, go to the secondary. This is a very good draft for offensive linemen. Cleveland doesn't need any. Quarterbacks, they're not going to draft it. And I think it's a great draft for corners. I think there's like 7 or 8, 9, 10 really good corners. Cleveland needs that badly. So it's interesting. They're not telling you who leads on J.J. Watt. But multiple sources have said the most lucrative Watt offer on the table is $15 to $16 million. That feels like Cleveland to me. It does. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
He said his three priorities were quarterback, personnel, and then money.
I know. I don't think that's the best place for him. The best place for him to me, emotionally, physically winning, is Green Bay. And then, because I don't buy into Big Ben in Pittsburgh.
Right.
I think the second place where he makes a lot of sense is Buffalo. Because
Buffalo, he feels like a Buffalo Bill. He feels like a Packer. He feels like a Bill.
Like, Tennessee sounds good. But if I get Josh Allen and Sean McDermott, really good offense. And it's not – Buffalo's secondary's talented. But their problem is they have no pass rush. So their very talented secondary gets burned. Tennessee's secondary is bad. And they have no pass
Tennessee
rush.
Tennessee needs him the most.
Yeah, Tennessee needs him the most. But I'm saying to me, Green Bay 1, Buffalo 2 – feels like really perfect fits, and he is in both instances the icing. I mean, if I told you J.J. Watt goes to Buffalo, that feels like a 13-win team. Like, he solves their primary issue.
Yeah, and we already know what Buffalo is capable of. I just want to see him go a place where I genuinely feel like he has an opportunity to win.
So if he goes to Buffalo, it feels like he solves their primary issue, no pass rush. If he goes to Green Bay, it's like, oh my gosh.
They're finally being aggressive.
If he goes to Cleveland, it's like, your linebackers are still bad. You don't know about Baker at quarterback, and the secondary gets banged up. It doesn't feel like he solves the final piece to the Super Bowl puzzle. If J.J. Watt is probably worth half a game in Buffalo, and they won, what, 11 last year, 12? I mean, Josh Allen's just getting better and better, so Buffalo's hard to argue your way out of.
Yeah, you want him to be the piece that makes them a Super Bowl team.
And that's what it feels like, especially in Buffalo.
Right.
Buffalo's got everything. Buffalo's secondary's fine. You just can't guard guys for 4 seconds.
Well, his former teammate, Deshaun Watson, has been very unhappy with the Texans for months and has made it clear he wants out, but the team plans to keep him and try and repair the relationship. Deshaun's posted plenty of tweets hinting at his feelings at the situation in the past, and since we are in the middle of this Deshaun Watson watch, everything he tweets and says matters, and he just tweeted this morning. Loyalty is everything. Don't you ever forget it.
Well, what does that mean? Does that mean he should be loyal to Houston?
I don't know what it means. Here's what I love about free agency, and this is what I love about the NBA free agency, and is now happening in the NFL free agency, which is like we follow all these breadcrumbs. Like J.J. Watt tweeted something the other day, and everyone was trying to break down like what it meant. It was very, you know, alluding to sales, like what. It means the Bills. Like it might just be a lyric, or it might just be something he's feeling, and it applies to his personal life. Like, we don't know, but because we're watching everything these guys do to find out where they go, it matters.
You know what? If I had not forgotten my phone at my hotel today, you know what would be fun today? If you and I both put out a cryptic tweet just today in honor of Deshaun Watson, and it means something to us, but we're not going to tell the audience what it means. Oh, I've got a good one.
Well, we have social media people. I think they have access to your Twitter, don't they?
No, they don't, actually.
They don't?
Nobody has access to, no.
Oh, wow. Well.
Listen, if I lose a key, I don't have access to my hotel room and a bed tonight, so.
I don't know. I don't know what it means, but we're going to follow every breadcrumb we can with this. So the Celtics have had a disappointing start, 15-17 record, as they approach halfway through the season. And both Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge are not in danger of losing their jobs. The team owner said, there are guys and we're sticking with them, and that's not even a question in my mind.
Well, who is suggesting that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of conversations about why the Celtics are struggling and who's to blame for it. Danny Ainge came out last week and said, you know, he's responsible for the roster, so if there's anyone to blame, it's on him. There's been a lot of questions about Brad Stevens. I mean, we talked to Chris Broussard earlier today, and I very much agree with him, but I've been on this since Kyrie. I understand Kyrie is not necessarily the easiest, most flowing individual to work with, but as Chris said, he's not a Ferrari guy. He's a get the most out of your Honda Accord guy, and the NBA is a Ferrari Lamborghini league. Like, it's a Rolls Royce league.
No, Doc
Rivers. You gotta make it happen.
Yeah, Doc Rivers is really good dealing with the Rolls Royces. He probably wouldn't be as good with a young team that doesn't have. You know, it is interesting. I think about that. It's really fascinating to think about that. Like, it doesn't really work that way in football and baseball. Like, but in basketball, the culture of basketball, it's so star driven. Where, like, Bobby Knight would have been a disaster in the NBA. John Beilein, a great basketball coach at Michigan, was a disaster in Cleveland. There's been a lot of college football coaches that have gone to the NFL and have succeeded. It's very rare when a college coach can go to the NBA and succeed, because college basketball is about the coach, the NBA is about the player, and it's I'll give you a guy who deals with stars well, Frank Vogel.
Yep.
He doesn't have any problem. Like, Frank lost in Indiana and Orlando. He didn't have good enough players. The minute you give him good players, LeBron loves Frank Vogel.
Ty Lue is also great with stars.
Yeah, they love it. So basketball is very unique. There's an argument to be made that Brad Stevens from Butler never dealt with a star, goes to Boston. He's not great with that personality.
I'm not saying he's a bad coach.
No.
Anytime that we're critical of coaches, like, oh, he's a bad coach, he's a good coach, everything doesn't have to be that clear. He may just not be great with stars, and this is a league where you're required to work with stars, or if you're going to win at a high level, you're going to have to work with stars. And I'm not saying that the Celtics roster is a bunch of Honda Accords. It's certainly not. It's actually the opposite of that, and has been the opposite of that, in my opinion. You should be getting much more out of your stars in Boston. And every single year it's the same thing. You can't get over the hump. So what is it? Is it that you need another superstar there, or is it that this system isn't necessarily working? I thought what happened with Kyrie was a mixture of Kyrie not fitting in that culture, but also I really believe when you have someone of that level, you gotta bend a little bit. You have to make sure everyone knows what their roles are. And it didn't appear that anyone knew what was going on there.
Well, it's the client. Buck Showalter as a manager was great with young teams. He would get every win out of them. Joe Torre was great with stars because Joe could suppress his ego. I always felt Buck Showalter was a little rigid and could struggle with star-studded teams. Right now, the Dodgers guy. Dave Roberts, a classic example. Everybody likes Dave.
Right.
Everybody. Dodgers have stars everywhere. Dave Roberts can suppress his ego. He's very well liked. You know, Buck Showalter's a great manager. Dave Johnson used to manage the Orioles years ago. Really could squeeze every win out of a roster. But you put him with stars, and it didn't always work. And I think Joe Torre was legendary for he was a decent manager, but he was great handling the A-Rod Jeter dynamic because there was almost an avuncular sort of like the tough uncle feel to Joe.
Right,
like,
and he was a big personality and a star as well. But Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, like you can still be a big name and be able to make it work with stars. I think that there's always one thing missing with the Celtics. And in this league, you've got to take it up a notch. Like, you have to do it. Look at the Raptors every year. Like, oh, the Raptors are good. The Raptors are good. They're the top of the East. They can't do it until they get Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Like, you got to have the talent. You got to make it work with that kind of talent. Finally, LaMelo Ball continues to add to his Rookie of the Year campaign. He scored 20 points with 16 coming in the second half and had a team-high 8 assists. It's the Hornets' 124-121 win over the Suns last night. This was his 9th game with at least 20 points this season, which is the most among all rookies. He's averaging 14.8 points, 6 rebounds, and 6.1 assists per game. He ranks 14th among all rookies in three-point percentage this season at 35%, a minimum of 50 attempts. I'm just loving what I'm seeing from LaMelo. I'm really proud about this. I feel like I was extremely early on LaMelo Ball.
He's an offensive player, and the league is benefiting offensive players.
I think it's great. But he also plays with a great confidence. Like, he is a very young guy, and he looks like he belongs out there. There's no timidness to his game. He talks a little trash here and there. I love it. He's a huge favorite to win Rookie of the Year, according to Fox Bet, at minus 2,000. But he was huge for them last night. And that's, like, he's a great shooter, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like people knock Zion for his defense. It's like, listen, man, when you're getting 27 out of a young guy, just be able.
I don't even know why we talk about defense when it comes to rookies.
You know, Nick Wright said this one. It was real. Because I used to criticize guys that didn't play any defense. And Nick Wright put this best. He said, listen, defense matters. But in the NBA, it's a 75-25 difference. If you have the best defensive team ever, you'd win 40 games. If you had the best offensive team ever, you'd win 62 and win the championship. You can win the NBA championship not being a great defensive team. You cannot win an NBA championship with the rules constituted today, right, being the Detroit Pistons of the 80s.
Well, that's why the Nets are so interesting, because as long as they're middle of the road defensively, I don't know what anyone's going to do with them.
Yeah, especially in the East.
Right.
Lakers, if they're healthy, could match up. Not a lot of other people match up. Good stuff. Joy Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
You know, it is funny, though. Chris Broussard said this. He said, some people are better with a Maserati than a Honda Accord or whatever. And I think about that. I would be uncomfortable with a Maserati.
I would not.
Okay, so your personality is you would like the sports car. I would get in it and feel like leather pants. I could never wear leather pants.
I'm wearing like pleather pants right
but
now.
But you wear very, not flashy, but very accentuating.
Yeah, I wear animal print probably 3 or 4 days a week,
yeah. And so you look very comfortable in it. You wearing Dockers would be like, that just doesn't work for
you.
It's
not the look.
Okay, for me, Dockers are me. Literally, I don't even put them on. They put me on. But I can't wear leather prints or leather pants. It just doesn't work for me.
It's true.
It doesn't work for my body language. I could never drive a Maserati. I would be humiliated to drive a Maserati. It's not in me. I'm telling you right now, if I won Powerball, I could not drive one.
That's true. I couldn't see you pulling up here in like a green Ferrari.
Oh, I'd be humiliated. You know what color car I bought? Gray. Why? Because in our parking garage, it disappears. I don't want to have the car that I can't do that. I can't wear leather pants. I can't drive a fancy car. It's not in me. It's not. I can't do it. But you are Tiger Print Joy.
I'm a little more loud, yeah.
Yeah, but it works totally with your personality. Well, and so Brad Stevens, yeah. It just doesn't work with his personality to deal with superstar guy who has to be a little coddled. It just doesn't work for him. Ty Lue used to yell at LeBron, and they were all good. There's nobody that was good. Like, I've had bosses who are I'm confrontational. I would yell at a boss. I'd yell at all my bosses tomorrow. I wouldn't care less. I have a boss upstairs, non-confrontational. So I can't go there with him. That's not who he is. So I've had, my wife's very confrontational. My ex-wife's not. So like, that's just what they're, so you have to realize what people can do. That's why you and I work. Because I bring my Dockers into the crib and you go animal print and the Dockers look at the animal print and go, whoa, but respect it. And the animal print people go, oh, well, we're not jealous.
Those look comfortable. Yeah.
That's why the show works.
But can you win in the NBA being a Docker guy is the question.
I'm not sure you can.
It works for the herd. It works for America's honesty brokers.
But it doesn't work in the league. That was the strangest 5 minutes I've ever done on radio.
I think it worked.
In my entire life.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
By the way, breaking news, Adam Schefter reports Russell Wilson has not demanded a trade. And he has a no-trade clause, so he has all the cards in this, all right? His agent, Mark Rogers, I'm a friend of Mark. I know Mark. I like him. I trust him. Wilson has told the Seahawks he would like to play in Seattle. He is not demanding a trade, but there are four teams he would play for, only four. Dallas Cowboys, New Orleans Saints, Las Vegas Raiders, Chicago Bears. By the way, it's not a coincidence with his wife. Those are big towns, Chicago, Dallas, New Orleans, Vegas. Those are entertainment meccas. New Orleans, there's a lounge near you, and they are paying people to sing in Vegas and Dallas and Chicago. So Russell doesn't want to be traded, but there's four teams he'd go to. The Cowboys, the Saints, the Raiders, and the Bears. We'll have more on this. But first, I want to bring in Sarah Kustak. She does Fox Sports. She's fantastic. By the way, she was shooting threes about the time Steph Curry was because she led the country in three-point field goals 17 years ago. Sarah was ahead of the world, and she's joining us now live, covering the Brooklyn Nets. Girl was shooting threes when coaches were yelling at players who shot.
Colin, every time I appreciate the kind words, but it always makes me feel a little old because that's like a couple of years ago. It felt like I was in college.
Okay, let's start with this. You're covering Brooklyn. They're on a 7-game winning streak. They swept the West. Are you guys even a little surprised that it's all worked and gelled this quickly?
I am surprised in the ways in which they've been able to gel and how they look on the floor, the type of wins that they were getting on the West Coast, considering the fact that Kevin Durant has missed the last 5 games.
Yeah.
He's missed 8 of the last 9 games. So the West Coast trip you're talking about, he played in one of those games, the first game against Golden State. This group is playing harder. Make no mistake about that. They are playing smarter. And I think it's not just about the talents, especially recently of James Harden and Kyrie Irving, but the rest of this roster, the complementary players, Joe Harris, Bruce Brown, Jeff Green. We can go down the list, DeAndre Jordan. Because of that, everyone understands their roles. And I don't think anything is more important than guys understanding exactly what's asked of them.
Anybody concerned that Kevin Durant's already missing time coming off an injury? How does that land for people in Brooklyn?
It's a great question. I think anytime a player of that caliber, there's always a small level of concern. But from the side of Brooklyn, from the side of anyone you speak with, their plan is to be overly cautious.
Yeah.
For him, there is no need to rush back. You saw the way that he came back into the season after not playing for 18 months, and he's been spectacular when he's been on the floor. A lot of the games he has missed has been simply due to health and safety protocols, and that's contact tracing, not he himself having COVID. So I think there's a variety of factors you look at, and the Nets are looking at the long view in the big picture of this before they have him back on the floor.
Steve Nash got a lot of heat earlier in the year for a couple of inbound situations, late game situations, and the guy never coached. So it's like, give me a break. There's a big difference between coach and player, player and coach. And he'd get a little heat for it. Now, over the last winning streak, I don't hear anything about Steve Nash. You hear him, you talk to him, you see him. What do you think is his strength so far as a head coach?
His basketball mind, to put it simply. He has an extraordinary way, not only to resonate with players, but to communicate with players. He understands how to deal with everyone up and down the roster. And I think that's in terms of accountability with the stars and with others. And more than anything, I'm glad you bring up that point, because we haven't been talking about him much in the coaching staff he has along with him. But I think by nature, when you look at this team gelling and how they seem to be getting more comfortable with one another, a lot of that comes to just Steve Nash getting more comfortable and familiar in his role. And he has been very honest about what he knows, what he doesn't know, what he's still working on. And I think the systems and the philosophies, principles, and schematic things you're seeing on both sides of the floor now, the guys are understanding what's being asked of them. The implementation of that, I think, to this point has been impressive.
You know, we were just watching LaMelo Ball, who Joy thought would be great. I didn't. We've watched Zion, who I loved. I think both Joy and I did. And it's funny, they're both very offensive-minded players. Zion's not much of a defensive player. And there was always this sense, covering the NBA and watching it for years, that you had to really be able to rebound and defend to win a championship. But, you know, the rules, Sarah, they've all changed. We got a scrunched-up schedule where everybody's fatigued, so nobody's playing defense. And I wonder, it does feel like part of the benefit of Brooklyn is, this schedule this year is, listen, they're just too gifted offensively. There's less film study, there's less coaching, there's fewer days off. Everybody's fatigued because the schedule is... It kind of, when I watch this team, I'm like, they're just a headache. You don't get the extra day of rest to guard these guys. Does it play out? Are you concerned at all? It's a little bit of a tinderbox emotionally, because these are one ball, three stars. How do you dance on that, knowing everybody gets their complement of shots over the next 4 months?
That, I think, is the last thing on any of their minds. And some of the biggest reasons, Kevin Durant is one of the most versatile players. The prowess he has on the offensive end, we can go on forever about, but he can fit in with anyone. I think James Harden's approach, his brilliance with the basketball, how he has taken over orchestrating the offense in regards to getting everyone involved, the balance of scoring and facilitation, how good Kyrie has been in terms of his numbers and accuracy from the field. And I think all three of those players have continued conversations every day on the floor, practice floor, looking at film. So none of that concerns me, especially given the examples that we've seen on the floor offensively. Defensively, to your point, I think we've seen improvement. A lot of it has come from positionally how they're playing, the scheme they have in which they're switching 1 through 4, 1 through 5. But so much of the defense has improved because they're taking care of the ball better. Less turnovers, less second chance points, less extra opportunities for other teams, and putting pressure on that Brooklyn Nets defense. And that's the thing that I think has to continue.
All right, Sarah Kustak, who, by the way, covering the NBA for a long time, first woman named a solo full-time color analyst for an NBA team. The Nets broadcasting team, by the way, has won best NBA broadcasting team like 1,000 times. Say hi to your broadcasting partners, who are amazing. And she led the country in threes in 2003. That's amazing. 17 years ago, if you shot a three, you better have made it. You were not allowed to miss a three in 2003. So you must have been really good at it, Sarah. And we appreciate you stopping by today.
You guys are the best. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah, the Nets broadcast team wins the award every year for best local NBA broadcast team. Has for years. Tired of cooking at home? Change it up without getting up. Order Jersey Mike's through their app for no contact delivery or no contact to the door pickup. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. So Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, according to Adam Schefter, rather play for Seattle, not demanding a trade. But he's given him the four teams he would play for, and he holds all the cards because he's got a no-trade clause. Cowboys, Saints, Raiders, Bears. Well, we know two of those teams need a quarterback. The Bears need a quarterback and the Saints do. I can't see the Cowboys moving off Dak. I don't see that. And I don't think the Raiders are going to want to pay $35 million for Russ because they got some defensive holes. The Saints and the Bears look really viable to me. And I'll be honest with you. Chicago, Dallas, New Orleans, and Las Vegas are entertainment towns. So I think he's telling you, I'm not going to Jacksonville. I'm not going to Green Bay.
This I mean, is he this goes is to the Saints though.
Oh boy, but they would have to get rid of so many players. I this is the best story. This is so great.
It so
really
fun.
Is. I'm just gonna sit back and think about this during our commercial break. So good.
It's very interesting.
Hour three next.